and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, August 30th, 2016. Presidents Kiir and Kenyatta meet in Juba today.
To ensure that there is peace, to encourage them to ensure that there is stability in South Sudan, which are the key ingredients for the prosperity that we wish for the people of South Sudan.
And more than 50 South Sudanese soldiers are court-martialed after last month's violence in Juba.
They have been tried and the sentences have been passed on to higher authorities. And as we speak, we are waiting for the presidential approval on at least one case for those who have been accused and sentenced because of murder.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In a one-day visit to Juba, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta urged President Salva Kiir to immediately restore peace in the country. President Kenyatta is the first head of state to visit South Sudan since last month's deadly violence between soldiers loyal to President Salva Kiir and those backing former First Vice President Riek Machar, who fled the capital hours after the violence erupted. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking to reporters after his closed-door meeting with President Kiir, President Kenyatta says he is here to encourage South Sudan's leaders to concentrate on bringing back law and order to the country.
To ensure that there is peace, to encourage them to ensure that there is stability in South Sudan, which are the key ingredients for the prosperity that we wish for the people of South Sudan. And I believe that that is why they struggled so hard to achieve their independence, not for war, but for them to be able to prosper.
Mr. Uhuru says he wants South Sudan leaders to continue to implement the IGAD brokered peace agreement, which President Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar signed over a year ago.
We are here to give encouragement and support. We are here to say and to ask the government to push along the peace agreement and the reforms that were agreed to under that peace agreement and to see how that can be fast-tracked.
Earlier this month, the newly installed First Vice President Taban Dengai paid an official visit to Nairobi, where he asked Kenyan officials to invest in South Sudan to help restore its devastated economy. Kenyatta promised that Kenya would provide both moral and material support to South Sudan.
To help accelerate this process so that we can ensure we have peace and stability, and then ultimately working together as a region, begin to work for the prosperity of our region and our people.
President Kiir insists that President Kenyatta's visit to Juba is proof that South Sudan is now at peace.
There is no fight in South Sudan. There is no war. People are very peaceful in Juba town. And so although whatever people say, it is not the situation on the ground. And for President Uhuru to come to Juba, as the first head of state to come to Juba after our crisis, it shows that the regional leadership is with us.
Kenya is one of a handful of neighboring countries expected to contribute to a 4,000-strong regional protection force under a resolution recently approved by the United Nations Security Council. For VOA News, I am Tido Justin in Juba.
The South Sudan Army says it has court-martialed at least 60 soldiers found guilty of committing gross human rights abuses in Juba during last month's fighting between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those who support former First Vice President Riek Machar. A military spokesman says more soldiers will be court-martialed. Waki Simon Wudu has more from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The court-martials come on the heels of several documented reports of human rights abuses committed by army officers not only last month in Juba, but across the entire country since the conflict began in late 2013. Army spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwong says the crimes the officers committed range from murder to looting and loitering.
They have been tried and the sentences have been passed on to higher authorities. And as we speak, we are waiting for the presidential approval on at least one case for those who had been accused and sentenced because of murder.
He says two soldiers court-martialed for murdering a couple in Wau in July have already been executed by firing squad. The United Nations, Human Rights Watch, and other international rights groups have documented several atrocities, including the rape of foreign citizens committed by government soldiers last month as deadly fighting raged in the capital. Wang says despite several reports of 8 workers being raped at the terrain complex in Juba last month, no soldiers have been tried for rape because no one has come forward and filed an official complaint of rape with the army.
The only problem we have been having is a lack of evidence. We have been accused left and right by Human Rights Watch and enemies, but unfortunately they have not come forward with evidence for us to move to go against those who have been suspected of having committed the crimes.
Kwang says the army is calling for the rights groups and alleged victims to report crimes to the army so charges can be brought against the officers. 25-year-old Juba resident Bus Buse says the court martials are a step in the right direction. Buse says relations between the army and civilians are poor due to the behavior of RAC soldiers.
There are many civilians who have lost hope and trust in the army just because of the atrocities and the crimes which were committed against the people of South Sudan. Women were believed to have been raped by soldiers, properties were looted. I believe there are so many other soldiers who committed crimes and they have not been brought to book.
Buse says investigations should be expanded to all parts of the country, not just the Juba. 28-year-old Juba resident Bini Tut agrees.
I can say it is a good move for them to be prosecuted. They should be taken wherever they should be taken.
The court martials were held behind closed doors and were not announced to the public beforehand. Human rights activist Amanya Joseph approves of the court martials but says much more transparency is needed.
The question which remains is how practical is it? Is the law being applied? Do we have information as to truly whether these people are being actually prosecuted? This is more than a question. It becomes very much important if the army has taken such position to make sure that every soldier who committed atrocities, so long as it will be brought to justice for us as human rights defenders, that's what is our stand.
Kwang says the army is conducting more investigations and expects to court-martial more soldiers in connection with the crimes committed during the fighting in July. For VOA News, Imwake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
Unknown gunmen have killed 2 soldiers and injured 2 others along the Juba-Nimule Road in the past few hours. Eyewitnesses report hearing gunshots a few minutes before arriving on the scene and seeing several victims who had been traveling in a Land Cruiser pickup truck. An SPLA spokesperson says he has not received any information about the incident. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Juba.
Data Emmanuel Gordon, who was traveling to Numeli on a public bus along the Juba-Numeli Road, describes to South Sudan in Focus what happened.
On my way to Numeli, just before a place called Kubi, so like some minutes before we reached the incident, the scene of the place where there were some gunshots that were heard. When we tried to go slowly, later on we came to find that there were 2 soldiers who were lying down, 2 people who are dead. One, like I thought, is a soldier because he was in a uniform and the other one was covered. Then there were 2 other soldiers who were injured and they were being rushed to Juba for medical attention.
Gordon says the injured believed to be security officers told him they did not see their attackers, nor did they know the motives behind the attack.
A national security soldier that came there, I was able to ask him, and what he told me was that the motive of the attack was not known. So visibly, I was able to see a Land Cruiser with one of the tires being shot at, and they were repairing it. So they basically don't know what the reason of the attack.
SPLA spokesperson Lul Roy Kong says he has yet to receive any details about the incident.
No, I have no information. Yes, sir.
Many attacks on the travelers and traders have occurred on the Juba-Nimule Road over the past few months. Few, if any, assailants have ever been arrested. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thousands of South Sudanese refugees continue to stream into Uganda, where aid workers don't have enough food to go around. More on that story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
In your opinion, what are the best ways to fight corruption?
To fight corruption, our people need to be enlightened, and there should be a system in place. We need to strengthen our institutions, because if institutions are strong enough, then I'm sure corruption will be minimized.
By setting up tribunal, well, that worked. It worked really very, very smooth for Burkinabes, and in that way, Burkina Faso almost realized their dream, which was fighting corruption.
The best is to have strong institutions which are independent, like the Anti-Corruption Commission must be independent of all that proceedings, giving them powers to investigate, to prosecute, and all that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we're talking about malnutrition. The UN World Food Program warns it may be forced to end school meals for more than 1.3 million children in West and Central Africa unless it receives $48 million. The WFP says the meals are a lifeline for children in the Central African Republic, Chad, and other countries in this region who suffer from chronic hunger and malnutrition. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
School begins in September and October in Cameroon, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger. The World Food Program warns more than 500,000 children in those countries are likely to be the first ones deprived of life-saving school meals. The WFP says 700,000 more children in 11 other countries will no longer receive the meals on which they rely when their schools start at the end of the year. WFP spokeswoman Bettina Lucia says such crucially important programs are endangered because of the many competing humanitarian crises around the world. She says the situation in West and Central Africa is especially critical because WFP is the sole or main provider of school meals in most of the region.
Families rely on this. If we can't deliver this, they are often really stuck. What could happen is that families take their children out of school. We have seen that all over the world, if money is being spent on school meals, the whole country will profit, the family will profit, the villagers will profit.
She tells VOA, children who go to school on an empty stomach cannot concentrate. She says many will become malnourished and their bodies will not develop as they should.
What it means is they will never be as smart. They will never have strong bones as you have. They will never be as productive in the long run as other children would be. School meals help that children get, especially girls, get an education. They will have jobs. They will have fewer babies. They will have babies at a later time.
The World Food Program has conducted studies in the cost of hunger in various parts of the world. The studies show that for every dollar invested in school meals, there is an overall $3 to $8 economic return. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, has embarked on a tour of Uganda's overcrowded refugee centers. Since violence began last July, nearly 90,000 South Sudanese have crossed into Uganda seeking shelter. As Lisbeth Pulat reports from Gulu, Grandi is visiting as tension in their centers is growing.
At Niamanzi Transit Center in northern Uganda, refugees greet the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, with song and dance. Originally originally intended as a quick waypoint before settlement, Niumazi currently houses thousands of refugees in makeshift tents. One family coming from Pagari says life has been difficult.
Because every day we are now almost 2 months. Mm. Every day beans, no change. No blanket, no saucepan for cook, even no bucket.
The government is trying to ease congestion by transferring refugees to Bidi Bidi, a new settlement able to house 100,000 refugees. Yet fears of underdeveloped infrastructure, sanitation, possible spies, and violence has many refugees too afraid to resettle, many saying they would rather return to South Sudan. A number of refugees say that when they resisted transfer last month, police shot tear gas into the camp.
We have ran from South Sudan because of gun. And then we reach here also, the police, Uganda government, have used bombardment. Even the children, even all people, they are crying. Because this bomb, they are red pepper, even affected some eyes, ears.
The UNHCR says they're unaware of any event in which police fired tear gas at refugees. They also say while they are still building at Bidi Bidi, refugees can be assured they will have access to water, food, and shelter in the new camp. Grandi says the Ugandan government has done a remarkable job settling new refugees, but the world must pay attention to the emergency in Uganda.
Nowhere in the world I have seen, and I've been in many refugee situations, nowhere in the world have I seen people settled with land and with the beginning of shelter in less than 2 months. 22,000 here in Pagirinha alone, and that's not the only group. But I want to warn everybody, if we don't get more resources and if the influx from South Sudan continues, it will be difficult to maintain these levels and to continue the response for the new waves that will come.
Grandi says the international community should respond to the crisis the same way it responded to the migrant crisis in Europe.
There we are funded 60-70%, here 20-30%. This is not right. We need to put this right.
Uganda is home to around 570,000 refugees, mostly from Congo, Burundi, and South Sudan. And although most South Sudanese say they long to return home, there has been no indication of when violence there will end. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Gulu, Uganda.
Human rights in Southern Africa are backsliding as nations repeatedly violate human rights and defy their constitutions, Human Rights Watch says. As VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg, the situation is being thrown into a sharp relief as Swaziland, the continent's last absolute monarchy, takes over as chair of the Southern African Development Community.
Southern African leaders are expected to focus on development, trade, and political reforms in member countries as they meet this week at a regional summit of the Southern African Development Community in Swaziland. Rights groups, however, say the leaders are ignoring a big issue, a widespread deterioration of human rights across the 15-member bloc. Zimbabwe made headlines recently with escalating protests against the increasingly autocratic government of President Robert Mugabe. And police responded by beating, gassing, and arresting demonstrators. Human Rights Watch estimates at least 74 people have been arrested in the aftermath of a protest last week that police dispersed, even though demonstrators had a court order allowing their march. Senior Africa researcher Dewa Mavinga says Zimbabwe should be at the top of the agenda as leaders meet this week.
Unfortunately, it does not seem that SADC leaders appreciate the seriousness of the situation in Zimbabwe, because they appear not to be looking or to be seeing what is happening. This is why we are raising this matter for the attention of SADC leaders, to say you cannot behave like the ostrich and bury your head in the sand when Zimbabwe is burning. There is need to quickly deploy human rights monitors so that at least you know for yourself what is happening independently and you take appropriate action or corrective measures before it's too late.
Critics say Mugabe has destroyed the once promising economy, rigged elections, and trampled on human rights during his more than 35-year rule. Mavinga says SADC's new leader is unlikely to challenge an entrenched leader. For the next year, the organization will be headed by Africa's last absolute autocrat. Swaziland's 48-year-old King Mswati III has numerous wives, cars, and jets in a nation where most citizens live in poverty. He has described his nation's unique government, in which opposition political parties are banned and the government is accused of suppressing dissidents, as a marriage between the monarch and the ballot box. Mavinga says he does not inspire confidence that rights will top the agenda.
It is not the right sort of message that should be coming from SADC leaders to have Swaziland as chair. But one hopes that perhaps it would be an opportunity for Swaziland in terms of the spotlight being on Swaziland for the next 12 months to highlight the abuses that are taking place in that kingdom.
The two-day summit ends Wednesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Sudanese youth affected by the country's continuing cycle of violence must have a chance to talk to government officials about ways to end the conflict and move the country forward, according to participants at a one-day symposium in Kampala over the weekend. Makerere University officials in Uganda organized a symposium to talk about how South Sudanese can use dialogue to, in their words, transcend the shadow of violence and build an inclusive and peaceful country. Bonifacio Taban has more from the Ugandan capital of Kampala.
Makerere University lecturer Deo Mawezi said the conflict in South Sudan has been a major concern to the region as a whole, including its southern neighbor Uganda. Mawizi said universities like Makerere are encouraging South Sudanese community affected by the conflict to talk to each other and realize they are all negatively affected by the violence.
We felt that in the advent of the crisis in South Sudan, we have also a role to play. We entered through provision of a neutral space for South Sudanese living here or in Uganda, and those who may have been in South Sudan for this case, to come and interface and openly talk about the issues that affect them.
Mawizi said he believes the South Sudan conflict can only be resolved through a comprehensive political process that enables South Sudanese people to work for a peaceful transition in the country. He said young people in particular must be informed about the latest development so they can help stop the war from escalating.
The youth must be at the center stage, because you know very well the youth are used to fuel. They are the ones that fight war, children, the women are the victims. All these stakeholders must begin talking.
Grace Andrua, a representative of South Sudanese Women Group in Kampala, agrees that dialogue is an important step for South Sudanese to work through their differences and come together.
If you carry this dialogue, we begin like this and then we carry it home to our people, it's going to help. Because talking, impossible is not an answer. Impossible cannot be an answer. Every problem has a solution, but it's a matter of how to address that problem and how to accept that there is a situation.
Garwang Agostini, a South Sudanese student studying medicine at Kampala International University. Agostino said dialogue inside and outside the country is the best solution to ending the cycle of violence the country has faced for decades.
What I've learned today is that we have learned awareness of what our problem is, and that would really give us a way forward to step for a solution or to devise a means gradually.
South Sudanese human rights activist Biel Boutros Biel, a panelist at the Symposium, said he is disturbed by the continual violation of the peace deal. He believes intervention by a third party force is the answer.
To stop the violence in South Sudan is to have an intervention force, and that force would be able to ensure that the transitional government of unity is in place, and then the forces that have been causing the violence, be it opposition, armed opposition, or the government and the Selfie, then would be able to see a threat of a third force, that they would be able to implement the peace agreement.
But Biel said any dialogue for peace must involve those hard hit by the 2.5-year-old crisis.
It is important that they talk together, and also there is an element of removing fears among the South Sudanese and those stereotypes and then prejudice that have characterized the situation in South Sudan. So it is important that people come together, they talk.
This is the first time Ugandan officials have organized a forum bringing together South Sudanese community in Kampala to discuss the transitional political process in the country. For BOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban, reporting in Kampala, Uganda.
Imatong state officials have hired the Ghanaian-based company Joint Afrique Limited for a reconstruction project worth more than $100 million. The company will pave 72 kilometers of road in Torit town, pave a Torit airstrip, and build schools. Dimo Silva Aurelo has more for VOA from Torit.
Joint Afrique Executive Officer Harold Torinkansa says the memorandum of understanding signed yesterday with Imatong state officials will improve the living standards of residents.
Those projects that are going to happen is $150 million projects. It consists of agricultural projects, it consists of infrastructural projects, it consists of building projects, it consists of rehabilitation of schools, so many projects. And all these things are geared towards the improvement of the lives of the citizens of Imatong State.
Torinkansa says the project will begin with rice production, which he hopes will get underway as early as October.
By Christmas, God willing, the citizens of Imatong are not going to buy rice from anywhere, but they are going to eat their own rice for Christmas. And I'm talking about just less than 4 or 5 months from here.
And Torinkansa says roads will be improved.
Existing roads which are here are going to be upgraded. So we are not going to have all the dust and the mud again, but we are going to have asphalt-paved roads.
Imatong State Governor Nartiso Loluke Manir says with the new improvements, the state hopes to attract new investors. He says the state will also build a hydroelectric power plant on the Kinete River. In the past, Loluke says the state has lost many investment opportunities due to a lack of electricity in the state.
As we sign the project today, and we are signing these documents, the hopes of our people continue to rise, and we are here to ensure, as the legal person say, that each party is to see the fulfillment of their own obligations.
The memorandum of understanding signed by the governor and company officials also states that Joint Afrique Limited will build cultural buildings for the state's use, including theaters, a stadium, and shopping malls. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Marina by Samba Mpukala.
Been listening to Samba Mapangala with the song Marina. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.